You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the 1980s and 90s, Bushwick, Brooklyn was one of New York's poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods, infested with drugs and crime. Stephanie Joshua grew up in Bushwick during those violent years, and in 2004, she returned to the neighborhood to talk with residents about what it was like to grow up there and to look at how new housing development and dropping crime is now changing Bushwick. Her independent documentary, Bushwick Homecomings, will be screened this Saturday at the Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival at Long Island University's Brooklyn campus. I'm pleased to welcome Stephanie Joshua to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What was Bushwick like when you were growing up there?
Well, when I grew up and I was born in 1975, it was after pretty much very close to the blackout. So the Bushwick that I knew, and I think the generation of people that I grew up with, the Bushwick we knew was one that had a very high vacancy rate, lots of vacant lots. And when I was coming up and going to school there, there was a lot of crime and a lot of drugs. And that's the only Bushwick that I really knew during that time. And it existed that way for about 25 years. And when I left for college, and this was around 1994, I began to notice a change after 25 years. There was a lot of change that began to occur in Bushwick. So it surprised me because the only Bushwick that I had known was a Bushwick with lots of vacant lots, and there was a lot of crime and a lot of drugs. And all of a sudden, overnight, it was changing, and it made me wonder what was going on and why was it happening at this point in time.
What keeps drawing you back to Bushwick? Do you still have family there?
Yeah, I still have family that lives in Bushwick. My dad has a house there. My brothers live in Bushwick. So I'm there often, and I have friends, a few that are still there who are born and raised there and still live there. So it's something I think you always want to go back to your roots on some levels and see, especially what's happening now. It's really curious to me.
Why did you title the film Bushwick Homecomings?
The film is called Bushwick Homecomings because, one, it's about, for me, coming home and seeing a neighborhood that is really changing before my eyes from something that I thought was very definite to a lot of uncertainty. So anyone who grew up there during the time that I grew up there, and a lot of people left, the neighborhood that, it's difficult to live there. If they were to come back now and see it, they'd really notice a different neighborhood. It's also called Bushwick Homecomings because a lot of people are coming home at this point, coming home from jail, having been arrested and been involved in the drug trade there. And also because one of the people that I feature in the film had come back to visit, and something happened to that person, and it really inspired the project. It was one of the main initiators of the project, what happened to one of the young men who came back to visit after moving.
You describe the changes that you now see in Bushwick. Tell me a little bit more about that. Besides seeing new housing on once vacant lots, what else are you noticing?
Well, aside from the really dramatic development, because Bushwick, almost a quarter of the neighborhood was completely vacant lots. Not just people not living in the community, but vacant lots that were, strewn with garbage.
And was this a result of the blackout the rioting that took place there, the disturbance that took there, civil disturbance?
After the blackout, a lot of house burning occurred. Partially in the beginning, it was thought that it happened from the people living in the neighborhood, but it was discovered afterward that a portion of it were people who owned houses during that time who wanted to get insurance money. So a lot of the homes that were burned because of that, people wanting money. So aside from the really rapid development of a neighborhood that was a quarter of the capacity of the neighborhood was vacant for 25 years, you see this rapid development. Every vacant lot in Bushwick is now developed. You'd be hard-pressed to find one space of land that doesn't have housing on it. So that's the one thing that's really just apparent that you physically see. I think the other thing that you notice that makes people curious is, there are a lot more for sale signs. When I go to my dad's house, there are letters shoved under the doors asking to buy, we'll pay cash. And people want to buy, and some people feel as though they won't be able to continue living there. So that's the other thing that you notice. Different groups moving in, there's a lot of uncertainty about the future people who have grown up there their whole lives and who own or rent in the neighborhood.
I'm speaking with Stephanie Joshua. She's the creator of the documentary Bushwick Homecomings. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. Stephanie, what led you to make this documentary?
Well, a few things led up to it. One was that I was writing my thesis, and I was in City College at the time. I was doing my master's thesis. And at the time, I was doing my thesis on a different topic altogether. It was beauty and culture.
Okay.
It was completely different. But what sparked me to change the topic was a friend that I grew up with in Bushwick was killed coming back to visit. And I was called about it. I remember coming home to New York. I was on some type of political protest trip to D.C., and my brother called and told me about it. And the funny thing about it is that a lot of people have lost their lives in Bushwick. I think he called me about that specifically because I think it hit home for him and hit home for me, because the person, for many people in the community, was really tragic and really unexpected. This is someone who grew up there and made it out and just came back to visit friends and got caught up somehow in a very violent act and lost their lives. So that was the main thing that made me turn around and say, I need to change my topic because something's happening in Bushwick right now, and this is what I think is more important to study. So I decided to change my topic to a study of delinquency with young men. And what I wanted to find out, what was the major factor that led to someone being involved in a delinquent act, whether it was growing up in two-family home or going to church or whatever those factors are. And in my findings and my studies, the neighborhood has the largest effect on whether or not you'd become involved in that. Over two-family homes, all of the men that I interviewed, you know, they went to church. Their parents were disciplinarians.
And yet they still got involved and swept up.
They got swept up because the neighborhood at the time, the police and law enforcement really weren't in control of what was going on. And you had to walk the streets to go to school. You had to take the subway. And so there was this, on some levels, an alternate enforcement of law enforcement. And it was really done by people on the streets. And a lot of the times that was dictated by, you know, people selling drugs, people who had money, and the young men specifically, since they're exponentially more involved in delinquency, they really had to make choices, and I think that their choices were very limited.
You interviewed five men for this film: Elijah, Sean, Mark, Jermaine, and Joey, men in their 20s and 30s. How did you choose people to talk to?
Well, for my thesis, I interviewed about 12 total. What I wanted to use in the film were men who not only were born and raised in Bushwick, but still live there.
And just men, not women?
Yes, because it's just men. It was a study of delinquency. And since men are far more involved in delinquency, especially the ones that in Bushwick, it was just young men. A lot of the women that I grew up with and what I went to school with, they don't still live in Bushwick. So I found that there were more people living in Bushwick who grew up there and were born there. There were more men who are still living there. A lot of the women that I grew up with aren't still there, myself included.
Why do you think the women were able to transition out and the men are still there?
I think it's not for the women so much of wanting to transition out. I think that many felt like they had to. It was a tough place to live. I think that the men that I interviewed stayed there because they didn't necessarily see an option. And if that's what you've known all your life, you don't really know anything different. For me, I know that when I left for school, I wanted a change because I felt like it was difficult growing up there, and I couldn't necessarily see myself doing what I wanted to do and achieving what I wanted to achieve by continuing to live in Bushwick at that time, and that's when I was 18. I don't know if everyone had that same outlook on things. I think for a lot of people, Bushwick is what they've known, and there isn't necessarily a need or want to leave there. But I do think for women, you know, it was a tougher situation for women growing up in terms of men, maybe young men, had become more accustomed to that type of living, and it wasn't necessarily as much of an issue. For women, I think it might have been a bit more of an issue.
All of the young men you spoke with in your film had stories of being robbed at gunpoint, of knowing people who were murdered, of family members who were addicted to drugs. Here's a little audio clip we pulled from Elijah.
So a guy, I leave the chicken place, I get my food, I leave the chicken place, I'm walking down Cooper Street, and a guy just run up behind me like, yo, don't move, you know what this is, I see the gun, I said, oh man. So he takes the VCR, go in my pockets, take all my money, and then he's like, all right, run down the block. So I picked my food up and run down the block, and he told me, no, leave the food. So I'm like, are you taking my food and my money, man? Like now I'm not even thinking about the robbery now. And now I'm really pissed off. Like, come on, man, you broke and you hungry? You stole my money, then you gonna take the food too? So he like, yo, just run down the block before I bust you in your bust before I shoot you. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right. So I run down the block, mad as hell. You know, I respect the robbery, you know, you caught me, but I was mad that he took the food. Like, what kind of clown shit is that? Like, take the food, too? So I went home, I got my gun, came back. I never saw the dude before, I never saw him again, you know? But it happens. It happened.
Elijah is speaking so casually and personally with you there. It's a really great story. My food. Do you know him? Did you know these guys?
Yes, I knew all of them. And I think that a lot of people and a lot of audiences have commented on the candor with which the participants speak. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that I knew them. We did grow up in the same neighborhood. So when I asked them to interview for the project, they understood that, you know, I wasn't an outsider coming in to exploit. And they also understood that I knew what happened.
Yeah, so I couldn't get anything past you.
Yeah, couldn't get anything past me, and I know what they went through. So, I was able to get really candid responses, and I think that they were able to tell the story very well. And that when people see that in other cities where we've screened so far, I mean, they laugh, and they really do, I think, kind of fall in love with the participants in the film. But you really do get to see what it was like to grow up during that time, and, you know, there's humor on some level, you know. It wasn't an altogether bad experience, but in hearing their stories, you get a feel for what it might have been like for you to grow up in Bushwick, and how would you have turned out and responded to the different things.
But meanwhile, he talks about going home to get his gun to go pop this guy for taking his food.
I think that really illustrates the fact that during that time, people who grew up in Bushwick felt as though they needed to protect themselves. A lot of the young men had guns. Even the most straight-laced people that I think I interviewed for the project, for the thesis, a lot of them had guns too, because they would speak about the fact that, you know, I went to school, I was on the football team, but I still had to take the train at 10 at night into Bushwick. And at 10 o'clock at night, you really kind of knew that you weren't going to be protected by the police coming in at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock. When you walk the streets in Bushwick during that time, still, even now, certain streets, you really have to understand that anything kind of goes. And for a lot of people, it meant, you know, protecting myself.
I'm speaking with Stephanie Joshua about her documentary film Bushwick Homecomings. We're going to a quick break. Stay with us. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm speaking with Stephanie Joshua. She's the creator of the documentary Bushwick Homecomings. And Stephanie, the experiences you get these five young men to talk to you about in the film, are they typical for people of Bushwick, or are they only typical for young black men in Bushwick?
I think that what I asked about was typical of most people coming up in Bushwick. The question I ask about being robbed, and I mention in the film that I also was. I think that was something that I wanted to bring out, because I wanted people who are watching the film who don't know the community, and it has changed a lot, but I wanted them to know what it was like during that time, and people who were born there during that time, how it factored into who they became. When you grow up in a neighborhood where, you know, you get robbed when you're 10 years old or 15 years old, and it's pretty commonplace because chain snatching and robberies were very commonplace with the influx of the drugs into the community.
And the crack epidemic.
Yeah, it was so commonplace. I was robbed twice before the age of 18, and I do think that that did affect part of the person that I became, and it does also affect young men going through the school system and the attitudes and things like that. It really does affect that group. So in terms of selling drugs and things like that, I don't know if the choice to engage in that or not is commonplace. A lot of the young men did. I don't necessarily, it wasn't as prevalent as among women, but there were women who did do that. But the experience, I think everything that was touched on in the film was very common. I think that even other cities, they commented on how that mirrored what was happening when they grew up, where they grew up.
Do you see these guys as criminals or as victims?
I see them as both. On some levels, I do think that they were pawns. That's the only community that they knew, and they came up and grew up in an area that was flooded with drugs. And it went unchecked for a very long time by the police department, A, because they couldn't really handle it. I think by the time they got a grasp on how prevalent it was, and one of the things we touched on about the news article that really set it off, they had no idea that there were open drug markets, just like a flea market, but a drug market. And really, if you didn't, people outside of Bushwick, if you didn't live there, you didn't know that it was happening. So for me growing up there, I really didn't know that this was, you know, not supposed to be happening. I know drugs are illegal, but the fact that, you know, crack vials were as prevalent as sand and dirt on the ground, that's just something that, that's just how it was during that time. Mm.
In the film, you also interviewed Rick Curtis, chairman of the anthropology department at John Jay College. Yeah. What was his experience in Bushwick? He's a white man, college professor. Why was he in Bushwick?
Well, he talks about having a storefront. At the time, he was doing research on HIV rates and how it was being transmitted. And Bushwick had a very high rate of that because of intravenous drug use. And they were tracking, he was there doing research and tracking how it was being transmitted. And I think he mentioned that he interviewed 850 drug injectors in Bushwick, which tells you how high the rate of drug use was there. And that was heroin that he was. So they paid them.
$30, I think he was paying for these interviews, but they were like 2-hour-long interviews, he said.
Yes.
And so detailed epidemiology studies and...
Right, testing it, and they were able to trace, was it being transmitted, was HIV being transmitted exclusively by this group? Was it a younger group? Was it an older group? But that is the reason why he was there. But in the time that he was there doing that, he was able to really, he was able to get to know the drug dealers in the neighborhood. He was right in the heart of it. After a while, they knew him. They didn't feel that he was a threat. So I think that that was why he was able to be there for so long and really be in and out, obviously not living in the neighborhood, but people just knew him. And he's the guy who, you know, gives junkies a little bit of money in order to do the research. And that didn't interfere with the drug trade. So he wasn't seen. I think today it would be very different, but he was able to get by without injury, I would say.
Mm-hmm. He compared the drug trade in Bushwick to a corporation, that it was one of the only employers in the neighborhood with opportunities to make a lot of money and to move up. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, I remember that.
So would young people, young men talk to you openly about, you know, this is where I'm getting my money from. Can't meet you tonight for a date because I have to go score some drugs or sell some drugs.
It was so obvious. I mean, it was such a part of growing up. You knew who the people who were drug dealers. I knew on my block who the people that were dealing drugs. Those people probably had a nicer car. They had jewelry. I mean, when you are in a neighborhood where, again, the police aren't in full control of what's going on, it gets around who's doing what, who not to talk to. If you talk to this person, you know, this is what they're involved in. Don't go on this block. This person sells drugs there. I mean, this is commonplace. Everyone knows who's doing what in the neighborhood like that.
This John Jay professor credits a New York Times article that you had referred to and you talk about in the documentary, an article by Mary Tabor on, he credits her article on turning the community around. Let's hear from him.
We went down that block about 5 or 6 in the afternoon. It was just starting to get dark. And she was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl from, Boston area or something. I think she was from the Northeast, but she was frightened walking down that block. I mean, people were like clutching at us and grabbing at us, and you know, she was freaked out. And she went back and wrote an article called "The Well," you know, and it was about this block and how appalling it was. And it was a 2-day front page expose in the New York Times. And believe me, after that article came out, we got SWAT teams, we got mobile command stations, we got helicopters.
Do you remember this?
The funny thing is, when I was doing my research for this, the New York Times, probably to this day, is not available or widely available in Bushwick. So when this began to occur, I think that I would say 99% of the people in the neighborhood didn't know why. But I do, you know, didn't know why the police were there so much now than they were before. So I don't know if I remember the exact day and time of when we began to see a crackdown, because, again, I would say most people had no idea that this article came out. I only really noticed it afterward.
But you noticed the crackdown. You noticed a heightened police presence.
There was a heightened police presence and a lot of arrests. And then a record number of arrests. So I think that the arrests that began to come with it really affected it. It went around the streets. People were getting locked up. A lot of people that, you know, were dabbling and jumping in and out of the drug trade realized that they were going to be going to jail and getting a long sentence for their involvement. So I do remember the crackdown beginning.
Elijah, in your film, says to you his generation really tore up the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He also says he's now too old to deal drugs. It's not clear what any of the young men you speak to are now doing to make a living, but do you think Bushwick's change was fueled in part by this generation either getting locked up or aging out of trouble?
I think that part of it was being incarcerated, definitely. I think that a lot of people lost their lives, and that is a good portion as well. A lot of the young men during that generation were incarcerated or lost their lives. And for the ones that don't fall into that group, you know, they make up the third portion. I think that those were the three outcomes of growing up during that time in Bushwick.
Do you think the development now is a positive thing?
Yeah, I think that the development is positive, and most of the people in the film think so as well. I mean, physically, it looks better.
I should say, though, that I was doing some research on foreclosures in Bushwick, right, and a study by NYU's Furman Center for Real Estate and Urban Policy in the spring found nearly 50% of homeowners in Bushwick hold subprime mortgage loans. So it's unclear where this development is going to go and if all of these new homeowners are going to stick.
Right, right. I think that there's so much uncertainty about what's happening in the neighborhood right now, especially from the people who live there. It just physically you see it, but there really is nothing behind it to make you understand why it started happening at the time in which it did and what the future holds. I think for me, it's still a question mark.
You say in the documentary that you escaped in books.
Right. But
you also say that it wasn't an option for other people in Bushwick. Why not?
I think that it was difficult for other people. As a young woman, it was okay to be a bookworm and just go to and from school, go home, do my homework without a stigma being attached to me.
Because you were a girl?
Because I was a girl. Whereas I think that young men and my brothers who would have done the same thing or who did do the same thing, there was a stigma of being soft attached to that. And when you were labeled being soft in Bushwick, that meant you could get jumped. It meant lots of different things. So
what happened to your brothers?
My brothers, you know, they dipped in and out. I think that they did what they needed to do in order to make sure that they survived. You know, one of my brothers might consider himself soft, but they're alive and you know, they're still here.
Did any of them do any jail time?
No, none of my brothers did jail time. But I do feel like for them, they felt as though they needed to know certain people. If they were out late at night, they needed to be affiliated with a group, and somebody had to have their back.
What do you think of the no snitching policy among residents in a community like Bushwick when police are trying to crack down on crime?
I think that when you look at no snitching, sometimes it organically develops. The reason why the no snitching thing occurs is because when people do help with the police, there's retaliation. And people often feel as though no one's going to be in Bushwick at midnight when I'm coming home to protect me.
Right.
And the reason why people begin to feel as though they can't tell is because they know they're not going to be protected. I don't think it's something that people just don't want to do it. It's something that people do for protection of themselves. And I think that when the police force is stronger, then that begins to fade away. But when you're in a neighborhood where, you know, you're testifying, and Maria Hernandez, the park that was named after her, this was someone who was testifying against a drug dealer, and she was murdered before a trial. So I think that that's the reason why that comes into play. People are trying to protect themselves. And when things are better, that begins to fall away.
You had no experience doing any filmmaking or any documentary filmmaking before doing this. Mm-hmm. How has this film been received?
I've been so fortunate that I've gone into this thing kind of on a whim, because I felt like this subject would make a good documentary. And I just wanted to try it and see what would happen. And with no connections with festivals or anyone in the film industry, I've been received very, very well. And I think that has to do with the fact that people have seen the film when I've sent it in. I just decided I'll send it into some festivals, look it up online. And they see the film and they relate to the subject. And that really, I think, is what has let the film go forward. And
you just won an award?
Yeah, I just won Best Indie Documentary last weekend in Detroit at the Motor City International Film Festival. So I just got back, and that was
Congratulations.
Amazing. Thank you.
And do you plan on doing another documentary, or is sociology still your calling?
I think that research is still my calling, and the great thing about it is that it translates into film
if need be.
Yes, if need be. So so far this has been an amazing, extraordinary ride. I could not have expected what has happened, so we'll see.
Well, Stephanie Joshua, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for dropping by here on WNYC. Bushwick Homecomings is playing tomorrow, September 29th, in the Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival at Long Island University's Brooklyn campus. For more information, visit our show page at WNYC.org. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC.